This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump is warning Turkey it would face economic devastation if strikes at the Kurds when U.S. forces pull out of Syria. Meanwhile, as AP's Ben Thomas reports, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is expressing confidence that the U.S. and Turkey can work out a way to protect U.S. allied Kurdish rebels in Syria after American troops withdraw.
Turkey's defense minister told troops stationed near the Syrian border that the government is determined to fight Kurdish militias it considers terrorists. But following a conversation with Turkey's foreign minister, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says he's optimistic that an agreement can be reached that allows the Turks to defend their country against what he calls legitimate terror threats, while leaving alone Kurds who fought alongside the U.S. against the Islamic State group and do not pose a threat to Turkey. However, Pompeo described such an agreement as a work in progress. Ben Thomas, Washington.
President Trump is dismissing news reports suggesting he is beholden to Russia and President Vladimir Putin, or hiding accounts of his private talks with the Russian leader the five times they've met, including at their July summit in Helsinki. But Democrats are promising hearings looking into those allegations.
Democratic Congressman Elliot Engel, who chairs the House Foreign Affairs Committee, says he wants to know if Trump is hiding something from his meeting with Putin in Helsinki. And he's not ruling out issuing a subpoena to the president's translator.
I would only consider it as a last resort, and I would hope we wouldn't have to consider it at all. But we'll have to see. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see what we're, you know, if we're being stonewalled.
The Washington Post reports Trump went to extraordinary lengths to conceal details of his conversations with Putin, even from his own administration. Trump told Fox News anybody could have listened to that meeting, but Engel says every time Trump meets with Putin, the country is told nothing. I'm Julie Walker.
And this is VOA News. One of President Trump's closest allies in the U.S. Senate is urging him at least to temporarily reopen the shuttered federal government and negotiate with Democrats on a border wall with Mexico. South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham told Fox News Sunday he would still support a presidential emergency declaration after giving talks another chance.
It really does perplex me how you expect this to end when you tell the president of the United States you can't get it. You get $1 for a wall when in the past Democrats have appropriated billions for the wall. What is he supposed to do? Just give in? He's not going to give in.
A Democratic Congressman Elliot Engel, who is chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, says that government workers are being held hostage by President Trump and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Declaring a national emergency along the U.S.-Mexican border would allow Mr. Trump to spend the $5 billion he wants for a wall without congressional approval, a move that Democrats will immediately challenge in court. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo flew to Riyadh after meetings in the Qatari capital of Doha, following stops in Jordan, Iraq, Egypt, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates during a week-long trip in the Middle East. Pompeo says it's an honor to participate in what's the second U.S.-Qatar strategic dialogue.
Our strategic partnership spans many areas and continues to grow, as demonstrated by the sheer number of topics we will discuss here today amongst our two teams. Defense and security, counterterrorism, labor, trade and investment, energy, education, and culture are all on the agenda.
During his trip, Pompeo urged the Gulf countries to end a political rift in which Doha had been boycotted by neighboring former allies for months. French President Emmanuel Macron on Sunday spelled out the questions underpinning his great national debate, a public consultation aiming to quell yellow vest anger after nearly 2 months of sometimes violent protest. Macron made his appeal in a letter to the French released on Sunday following the ninth consecutive Saturday of nationwide yellow vest rallies, which saw an uptick in turnout. The protests have become the biggest crisis of Macron's presidency, and he hopes that returning to the more participative democracy he promised in 2017 grassroots campaign will satisfy the protesters' demands. Hundreds of protesters marched through Sudan's capital, Khartoum, Sunday, calling for the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir as unrest and demonstrations entered their fourth week. Protests that began nearly a month ago against economic instability and a sharp increase in the price of bread have remained consistent and evolved to a call for the president, who has served nearly three decades, to step down. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Monday, January 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Southern African Development Community, SADC, is calling for a national unity government in the DRC.
The wisdom among SADC leaders is that a government of national unity through a negotiated settlement was more reasonable than the rule of a recount.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, who is chair of the SADC Organ on Politics, Defense, and Security Cooperation. The University of Liberia student leader is calling on Liberia's government to lift the suspension of student politics to avert what he calls a national crisis. And the Chief Justice of Nigeria will today, Monday, be arraigned on charges of failure to declare his assets.
What we would like to see happen is let the charges be withdrawn. If the federal government believes that there is a case against the Chief Justice, let the matter be referred to the National Judicial Council.
Paul Usoro is the president of the Nigerian Bar Association. Cameroon's self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia accuses the military of burning down villages. And Senegal's hip-hop artists discuss their role in the country's democracy. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Southern African Development Community, SADC, has recommended the formation of a national unity government in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The DRC Electoral Commission declared main opposition candidate Felix Tshisekedi winner of the December 30 presidential election, but another opposition candidate, Martin Fayulu, who came second, as well as the country's Roman Catholic Church, said the count was rigged. In a statement Sunday, SADC said a recount of the vote would provide the necessary reassurance to both winners and losers. Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, who is also the chair of the SADC Organ on Politics, Defense, and Security Cooperation. He says the wisdom among SADC leaders is that a government of national unity through a negotiated settlement is more reasonable than the rules of a recount.
The SADC, through the chair of the Organ on Politics, Defense and Security, is taking note of the call by the opposition and the Catholic Church and other stakeholders for a recount. And upon taking note of that, the wisdom among SADC leaders is that a government of national unity through a negotiated settlement was more reasonable than the rule of a recount.
Amos, this position by SADC, doesn't that undermine the position of the Independent Electoral Commission in the DRC?
SADC takes a view that the elections were fairly successful, and SADC wants the DRC to build on this historical success. So if the Electoral Commission result has been disputed, it has been undermined already by the stakeholders. And therefore, instead of going further to undermine other institutions of governance in the Congo, which might include the Constitutional Court, given the strong objection and the precarious situation, it is the wisdom of the SADC leaders that probably the political leadership in the Congo could consider a negotiated settlement. And this position has been expressed also by the foreign minister of South Africa, who has gone further to put forward a proposal at the UN Security Council.
Is this the view of SADC that perhaps there should be a government of national unity in the DRC?
Yes, that is the view that is the most viable option to build on broad consensus, strengthen institutions of governance, including the Electoral Commission, which is why I'm saying that it's not undermining but strengthening, to build consensus, broad consensus. As you know, the Electoral Commission has released results, which SADC, in a statement, said has taken note of, but to further build on the possibility of a lasting, durable peace and consensus in the Congo. The SADC leaders, of course, through President Lungu, the chair of the organ, expresses a strong view that the leaders, political actors in the Congo, must consider a government of national unity.
Zambia had an election, and there's been this dispute since that election. Would you have accepted if SADC came in and said there should be a unity government?
SADC did not call for that in the Zambian case. Within 24 hours, SADC monitors declared clear winner. Church mother bodies, including the Catholic Church, declared that the electoral tally that they have, independent voter tabulation, tallied with that of the Electoral Commission. The European Union the African Union, SADC, Commonwealth, and all observers within 24 hours declared that I was a clear winner, and messages of congratulations were sent. Had SADC called for that, the government would have considered it.
Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, who is also the chair of the SADC organ on politics, defense, and security cooperation. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Nigerian Bar Association has accused President Muhammadu Buhari's government of targeted assault on the country's judiciary. This comes as the country's Chief Justice, Walter Onungen, is set to be arraigned today, Monday, before the Code of Conduct Tribunal on charges of failure to declare his assets as required by law. Paul Usoro, the president of the Nigerian Bar Association, says the group is calling on the federal government to withdraw the charges because the case does not follow legal precedents. He says a court of appeal has held that a judicial officer who has not been investigated by the National Judicial Council and sanctioned for misconduct cannot be arraigned in any criminal court in Nigeria.
We are not looking at the merits of the case itself. In other words, whether or not the Chief Justice had declared his asset, that's not the focus. There is a body called the National Judicial Council, and the law requires that the National Judicial Council should be the one that should have a look at a complaint of this nature, and they would make a determination. And it is only after their determination that any prosecuting agency, assuming that a criminal infraction is suspected, can take over and can decide to prosecute. What the government has done is they have not fulfilled the precondition in regard to this matter. And we believe that being a country that is ruled by laws, that we should go through that precondition first. And also considering that this is a separate arm of government with its own independence, then it also has its disciplinary processes. And that is really what we're advocating the government should respect.
Your statement says that this is a pattern on the part of the federal government against the independent arms of the government. What evidence do you have to say that this is a pattern?
You know, we had mentioned two instances. We had mentioned that there was a failed attempt to remove the head of the legislature. Incidentally, he was also prosecuted before this same tribunal not too long ago. And there was the outcry, mainly instigated by government and its agencies, that he should resign from his position as the president of the Senate. And then we have another instance that the head of another arm of government is being hauled before the same tribunal, again on issues of whether or not assets had been properly declared. And that seems to create something of a pattern.
You also wonder why this is happening now, with just weeks before Nigeria's presidential election. And you claim that, could it be that this is a way of intimidating the judiciary? But why would that be a fact?
Well, maybe you need to understand the way the legal system works, particularly on matters of election. Once the elections are conducted in another couple of weeks, then the election petitions will start, and the ultimate decider as to who wins, in particularly in governorship and presidential elections, the ultimate decider is usually the Supreme Court. And of course, it is the responsibility of the Chief Justice of Nigeria to constitute the panel that hears these matters.
As we know now, the trial is today, Monday. What is it that the Nigerian Bar Association would like to see happen? What is it that you would like to see happen?
What we would like to see happen is let the charges be withdrawn. If the federal government believes that there is a case against the Chief Justice, let the matter be referred to the National Judicial Council, and let the National Judicial Council be given the opportunity of having to make a determination on it. Then we take it from there. But the present activity of having to hold the Chief Justice of Nigeria to the tribunal is rather unseemly. It is not what is contemplated by our laws.
Paul, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you, James.
Paul Usoro is the president of the Nigerian Bar Association. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Today's Monday, January 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa On the Voice of America, I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. A University of Liberia student leader is calling on the government of President George Weah to lift the suspension of student politics at the university to avert what he calls a national crisis. This after university authorities last Friday suspended campus-based student political activities after opposing student groups clashed on campus. The authorities vowed to expel any student involved in activities that disrupt learning. Martin Colley is the Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He led protests last year demanding that the government account for the missing $15 billion Liberian dollars and for President Weah to declare his assets. Colley says the government ordered the suspension of campus-based politics because it doesn't want him to ascend to the leadership of the student government.
The decision of the University of Liberia to suspend student politics is not only unjustified, but it is anti-democratic. It violates the political rights of thousands of university students. One of the basic reasons why the university had to suspend student politics because it was influenced by national government. Since my ascendancy, Mr. Botte, as standard bearer of the Vanguard Student Unification Party, the government has been disturbed. This is why they have managed to influence the administration of the University of Liberia to suspend student politics. But let me just say this, Mr. Botte. We do not accept the decision of the university to suspend student politics. We are going to challenge the undemocratic decision of the University of Liberia.
Mr. Colley, the authorities, they are citing rules 9, 10, and 11 of the University of Liberia student handbook, which states no student shall for any cause whatever insult, assault, or battle teachers, staff, fellow students, and other university personnel or visitors to the university campus.
Mr. Botte, this is an entire conspiracy against the dominance and supremacy of the Student Unification Party. For the 5 years, before you can even suspend student politics, there must be an investigation. There was no investigation. But we understand what is happening, Mr. Botte. The realities are glaring. The government does not want me to extend as president of the student government. So they are creating all kinds of conspiracy to undermine my ascendancy as president of the student government. Since, in fact, my party has preferred me as standard bearer. Recently, we led a mass protest to ensure that the government accounts for LD16 missing billion. We also led another protest demanding that the president declare his assets. So basically, this is the background of the entire episode. Like I said, Mr. Botte, we want to call on the United Nations, we want to call on the Liberal Council of Churches, we want to call on the National Muslim Council, we want to call on the ECOWAS, the African Union, we also want to call on the European Union and all international bodies to immediately intervene because this could degenerate into a national crisis if not managed well. The government needs to focus on improving the livelihood of the people.
Martin Colley is the Secretary General of the Student Unification Party at the University of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Vice President for University of Liberia Relations says the suspension of campus-based student political activities will remain in place indefinitely. Maurice Tuer says authorities will not tolerate violent student behavior that denies other students their right to learn.
Over the last several months, student political activities have reached and culminated to a level where students fight each other, hurl rocks and stones at each other, and this has fundamentally hindered the functioning of normal academic activities. Last Friday's incident reached a level of madness on our Capitol Hill campus, where one group of students dressed like militants and gathered rocks and stones and were in battle mood and began to throw stones. In the process, ordinary students who were going about their normal academic business were affected. As you know, we are currently administering our midterm exams. This type of behavior, this madness resulting to violence, is against the UL student handbook.
Mr. Tuer, let me say that I spoke to Mr. Martin Colley, one of the student political leaders there at the University of Liberia. And he thinks that this is an interference by the government in the student politics, and that also that the government or you, the university, took the decision because you do not want him to take up the leadership of the student body.
The university administration has a responsibility to protect life and property. Student political activities is an extracurricular activity.
Unfortunately, over the last couple of semesters, this type of behavior, this type of madness, denies others the liberty and the freedom to enjoy the ambience of the University of Liberia campuses. And so our decision is to guarantee safety, first of all, of all our students and faculty and staff and others who come to the University of Liberia. It is not politically motivated by any other reason. Freedom of movement, freedom to join any extracurriculum organization is a right. However, the overarching right and the liberty of our students cannot be interrupted, disrupted by politics. And so we are suspending student politics to get to the bottom of this.
Norris Torres, the Vice President for University of Liberia Relations, he was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. As presidential elections approach in Senegal, hip-hop artists gather in the capital, Dakar, this month to discuss their role in democracy and politics. While incumbent President Macky Sall is favored to win the February polls, musicians held a panel to debate whether they should support a certain candidate. Sheikh Sin, also known as Kiti, a moderator of the debate, spoke with Ricky Stryak about the evolving role of rappers in modern Senegalese politics.
But from 2012, it started with Pakuti supporting Abdoulaye Wade. And then since then, it sort of freed everybody. And for these coming elections, we've got lots of rappers posting on their Facebook pages, participating into political debates, and clearly supporting this candidate or that candidate. So how the hip-hop community, some of the hip-hop community are a bit lost because they don't understand anymore who are the rappers working for. And that was mainly what we were discussing on Wednesday.
Do you think some of these rappers are they given money sometimes, or is it they just support the ideology of these candidates?
That was also one of the discussion points the other day. How comes everybody's saying now that, yeah, we got to show our political colors, we got to let people know who we're supporting, but then whenever a rapper supports the government or president party, it is marginalized by the whole hip-hop community somehow. People always think that whenever you support the ruling party or the ruling president, it is because of money. And most of the times, it is true, money is involved. We know for a fact that Pakuti, for his support for Abdoulaye Wade, received money. Yeah, in any case, I think I'm convinced personally that money is involved.
And I thought it was interesting, the discussion as well, about whether hip-hop needs to even be political. And it has to be political. Sometimes it just has to oppose something. One of the rappers said that Macky Sall didn't even have the right to run for this mandate, that's just not true. He does have the right, constitutionally. When it's always about opposing power, sometimes there runs the risk of just opposing power for the sake of opposing power, right?
Yeah, and that was the reason why I asked these two questions. Where does your legitimacy come from? And what are you expecting from the next president? Because sometimes I got the feeling that most of the rappers who are supporting candidates from the opposition, they also do it for very populist reasons, you know. And there's no, they can't explain things. Because when I say, what do you expect from the next president, it takes, you need to know about needs in education, in health, or agriculture. You know, and we need that level of commitment when rappers get into politics, that they come with real facts, that they know what they're talking about.
That was Sheikh Sin, also known as Kiti, a Senegalese hip-hop artist and political commentator. He was speaking to Ricky Stryker from Dakar. An official of Cameroon's self-proclaimed Republic of Ambazonia has accused the Cameroon military of burning down villages in the country's volatile English-speaking regions. This comes after the Cameroon military on Sunday said it killed 7 attackers near Bamenda, capital of the Anglophone Northwest region. Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement.
As far as the killings by French Cameroon soldiers are concerned, it is no longer new to us, whatever they do, because we know they have not only killed citizens of Ambazonia, they have burned down whole towns and villages. and they continue to do so through the observance of the international community.
So are you saying that the Cameroon army assertion that they killed 7 of your fighters, and most recently that it also killed 21 of your fighters also as of last week, is the army gaining on you?
No, we are not fighting the army. Absolutely not. We are defending ourselves, defending our women, defending our children. You realize we don't have schools going on in our territory.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport on a rather sad note as former Bafana Bafana striker Phil Masinga has died at the Johannesburg Hospital after a protracted illness at the age of 49. The former professional footballer was part of local teams Jomo's Cosmos and Mamelodi Sundowns. He later played in the English Premier League for 2 years with Leeds United. And now to the CAF Champions League matches played this past weekend following the start of the group stage. Trophy holders Esperance snatched a lucky last grabs draw to make it 1-1 in Guinea against Horoya, while Casablanca went on a 5-goal ramp between Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa 5-2 in Morocco, while Nigeria's Lobi Stars defeated South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns 2-1 in Enugu. DR Congo's TP Mazembe beat Egypt's Ismaili 2-0, and Zimbabwe's Platinum Stars and South Africa's Orlando Pirates ended their game goalless. Elsewhere, Aberdeen Belkia scored on the 89th minute to earn group newcomers Constantine from Algeria a surprise 1-0 win away to former champions Club Africain from Tunisia in raids. The next round of matches are set for the 18th and 19th of January, with the top two in each group qualifying for the quarterfinals. Egypt's sports minister Ashraf Shabhi on Sunday vowed that the North African country will host a successful African Cup of Nations in the summer, saying everything was in place to make it a success. Mr. Shabhi also said that a high committee will be formed to remove any obstacle facing the Nations Cup organizers. The prime minister will preside over the committee. Egypt was granted a hosting right of the Nations Cup at the expense of South Africa after winning a majority of votes at the CAF Executive Committee meeting earlier this month after Cameroon failed to meet the requirements of CAF to stage the tournament. And now to Uganda, where 22 Ugandan football referees have received the Federation of International Football Association badges. The Federation of Uganda Football Association President Moses Magogo witnessed the handover of the badges. The FUFA president urged the referees to defend the prestigious FIFA badge at all times. He also ordered that referees have a huge role to play in the development of the game. Staying in Egypt, but this time around in another sport, handball. Egypt national handball team lost their second game in a row in the World Men's Handball Championship after Qatar claimed a 28-23 victory over the Faroes. Egypt were drawn into Group D with Sweden, Hungary, Qatar, Argentina and Angola, with the top three teams advancing into the next round. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, January 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook. I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, some Africans have concerns that Western versions of democracy are being imposed on the continent. Are democratic governments what's best for Africa? We'll discuss the issue on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.